Good evening. This is July 8th, 2014, and session 5 of Buddhism in a Nutshell. This is the final session. So next Tuesday, if you're so inclined, Meditation 101 will be starting with Jill Marie. We'll talk a little bit about that at the end of the session. But our plan for tonight is to continue our discussion about the three principal aspects of the path, and we're going to spend a little time focusing on the third aspect, the wisdom of emptiness. So we are going to deep dive just a little bit tonight, very briefly. First, I'd like to start, as always, with a meditation, just to get our minds here. And again, I don't know why, but ever since I started teaching this class, I've just been in a scramble fest before I get here. And so this is always just a very good reminder for me, just to take a minute and center in on what we're doing here. So for those of you that are new, we'll just get into a comfortable position. We've been working on a 7-point meditation posture. So it's just briefly just getting yourself into a comfortable position that can be held in a sustained manner. And it really is more about being more comfortable than in this perfect 7-point posture. It will come over time as you work with it, and you'll find that it really does help, but it is a practice. So be gentle with your mind and your body while you do this. Okay, come on in. As far as the 7-point postures, the first part is that your base. If you're sitting on the ground, you can cross your legs, get in the Vajra or half Vajra, the lotus position, whatever's comfortable for you. If you're sitting in a chair, it's best to sit a little bit in the front of the chair. Again, so you're not slouching back. Get your feet flat on the floor, or sometimes it helps to have a cushion if you're a little bit shorter. Sometimes this floor can get cold or hot, I guess, in the summertime. But just settle your legs. Your back is straight. Shoulders are back. Your head is slightly tilted forward. Your eyes can be slightly closed or a little bit open. If they're open, you're focusing really on nothing about 5 feet in front of you, because the point is you don't want to be too distracted by what's in front of you, but you also don't want to close your eyes and get too comfortable, and you could even fall asleep. Arms slightly akimbo, they call it, just to let air pass between. And in this tradition, we put our right hand on our left, slightly touch our thumbs, and your thumbs are just slightly below your belly button. And again, this is more about a position that can be sustained. There's a reason for every part of this position. So get yourself comfortable. We're going to do the mind like the sky meditation again, because we've only really done that once. And this meditation is really about working with our ordinary perceptions. Our thoughts and feelings seem to be all there is to our mind, just one thought, feeling, image, or idea after another. And all of these mental contents seem to fill up our minds completely, as if our minds are small, finite containers. But this is an illusion, a misperception on our parts. Our minds are vast and spacious, clear. Our minds have no boundaries and no limits. When we experience the vast, clear spaciousness of our mind, the clarity of our awareness, we begin to see how our thoughts and feelings are like clouds in the sky, simply passing through this vast, spacious awareness, not filling it up. And suddenly we have some space from the endless attachments, aversions, and dissatisfaction of life. So just slowly start to quiet your mind. Focus your attention on your breathing. Breathe naturally. And use one of the breathing meditations that we've learned here, whether counting the breaths or bare attention, to settle your mind and bring it to a state of deeper focus and concentration and ready to engage in meditation. Let's create an altruistic motivation for this meditation session. Think that you're meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person, benefiting not just yourself, not just your friends and family, not just your coworkers, but able to be of benefit to all beings. So let's start by practicing the bare attention, just breathing. When you gain a deeper level of concentration and focus, loosen that concentration just slightly. Emphasize the element of mindfulness in your meditation a little more strongly. Allow your mind to be attentive and observant of whatever comes to notice, regardless of what it is. Don't identify with the mental elements arising, just simply observe them like a tourist. Allow them to arise as you observe them and pass away without getting involved, without chasing them. Just be aware. Allow your mindful attention to expand. Encompass your entire sphere of experience, of consciousness. Forget that there is an observer and something being observed. Simply imagine your experience, your consciousness, as being just like the sky. Completely clear, vast, spacious, without end. Concentrate on this experience. Identify with this experience. Clarity, spaciousness, awareness. Our minds are completely clear, just as the sky is completely clear. The light of the sun shines down on us through the clear sky. Our awareness and wisdom shines through the clarity of our minds. Sometimes clouds fill the sky and obscure the sunshine, but the sky doesn't get upset. The sky doesn't identify with the clouds, and the sky doesn't judge. Clouds just pass through the spaciousness of the sky. They come and they go. The clarity and spaciousness of the sky isn't compromised by the clouds. They just arise and pass. Our minds are clear and aware and spacious like the sky. When a thought or an emotion, an idea or an image, a sensation arises in your mind, just observe it, let it arise, and let it pass. Each thought, each mental event, just like a cloud. Your mind, the sky. Concentrate on that experience of space and bliss. Whenever we identify with and are carried away uncontrollably by a thought or a feeling, we lose any awareness of the spacious clarity of our mind, of the vast, clear, and knowing nature of the mind within each thought or feeling that occurs. Our perspective becomes small and constricted. It's as if all there were are clouds and we've lost the sky. We lose that wonderful open spaciousness. When we can simply observe these thoughts and feelings arising without getting involved, when we can identify with the sky instead of with the clouds, then we can reside in that spacious purity of our basic clarity of mind. Calm, clear, peaceful, open spaciousness. Without agitation, without delusions, without anxiety and stress, without dissatisfaction and attachments and aversions. Just open spaciousness. dedicate all the positive energy that we've created through this practice of mindful meditation to becoming a better and better person who's more at peace in life and who can bring more peace and well-being to others in every moment of every day. Bring your attention back to the room. How are you doing? Any questions from the last class? We're going to go into a little bit more review and stuff. I'm going to open this up a little bit. How many people remember to wake up last Wednesday and think about dying? Maybe about 4 hours later you remembered. One of the things that we did was we talked last time about the Buddhist perspective of death. And it's quite a bit different than the Western perspective. Okay, we went through this last time. And it's an actual practice. There are full-on meditations, death meditations, to become more familiar with it. And once you're more familiar with it, you tend not to be afraid of things that you're familiar with. And you start to work through it, and then you actually start to appreciate some things, and you act differently, you live differently. So how many people actually thought about it? I want to hear this. Did it make a difference? Where's that mic? Okay. Did it make a difference? Did it make a difference to you? Who wants to go first? Back there, because I do. I love this. I still will do this practice every once in a while.
Yeah, I told myself that I was going to die at 6 o'clock, and then I looked at my watch at 6:30 and realized I had wasted my my whole day.
So. But isn't that an awareness?
Yeah.
Right there, that just life gets in the way. Okay, I've been practicing for a long time, and I still will have that, what did I do today? What did I do with this day? That's a shocker too, isn't it? Just that moment.
Yeah.
So, just it came in the morning and then it was gone until, that was it. Okay, anybody else? Did anybody really act differently at all? Did anybody really think about up here? Takes a few times to get it going.
I think for me, I kind of started a couple years ago, but it was more from the perspective of if today were my last day.
Okay.
I mean, it's still kind of the same thing.
It is.
But I guess I didn't think about dying, you know, the death part. It was just if it's my last day
here
on earth, what would I do? And I've just tried to live my life by that.
Yeah.
You know, focusing on the moment. But that's, you know, I've kind of been doing it a while.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it changes things. Like I said, As a cancer survivor, I wish I could give that gift of the preciousness of life without having to go through all the ick. And I'm, you know, 5 years down the road now, and I still forget. I have to bring it up every once in a while so that I remember, okay, here I am. I'm stressed about this paperwork. I'm stressed about this work. Really? Really? So.
The thing that affected me the most was the bugs now. About I'll see a gnat or a mosquito, and I'm like, you know, and then there was like this little, I don't know what it was, in my sink, and here I'm trying to get it out of my apartment. But I'm like, I can't kill it. It just something happened. I realized I couldn't kill.
Yeah, it changes, doesn't it? All of a sudden when you think about it like that.
And even these little silverfish thingies.
Yeah, like, anything, doesn't matter.
I'm like, I've got to go out and buy paper cups so I can, like, put them in the cup.
Yeah, I use Tupperware and folders and paper. The funniest thing is I've been practicing, so I've been doing this for a long time. My husband, okay, he started doing some of this not because he was thinking about it, but because he didn't want to upset me, okay? But I'm catching him doing this stuff even when he thinks I'm not around. So it affected him. He's doing it, all right? We spent 2 hours last summer getting a hummingbird out of the garage. All right, he's doing it even when I'm not around, with bugs and everything, and he talks to bees. Come on. So it does. But when you when you change and you think about it as a life, it changes how you think about things. We're going to inadvertently kill things. Like I said, this is when we were going through those things that we all think we don't do. We do them all. We just don't think about it that way. But if it changes your mind, it changes how you think about it. That's part of it. All right, that's part of the practice. Any other questions before we go on? About anything? I'm going to start opening this up. Okay, we'll get into some other things, but I want to open this up a little bit. Nothing. You guys are still so quiet. How many people have gone onto the Buddhism in a Nutshell page on the Kadampa Center website? Okay. All of those handouts are there. We haven't actually gone through all of them. There's one that I want to talk about briefly because it's an actual... Let's see if I can find them all. I was trying to get through everything. Handout number 6, that's the foundation of all good qualities. For those of you that were going through and really looking at everything, this is a very special prayer, and it's part of the Lam Rim prayer. Lama Tsongkhapa, who wrote The Graduated Path, we've talked about the Lam Rim back, I think it was the first or second day, and this is a very special prayer that comes through this. All of the things that we've talked about in this class are in this prayer, okay? So I'm not going to go through the whole thing now, but as you go through those readings and go through those handouts, think about all of the different things that we've talked about in class and find them here because they're all here. The preciousness of human life, okay? We're going to talk about the guru. We're going to talk about the teacher. We're going to talk about emptiness. We're going to talk about all these things. Look through this. And find the things that we've talked about, because they're all here. Many people memorize this prayer. Many people study this prayer. Many people use this as a meditation, a glance meditation, because everything's here. Okay? So as you go through and you find these things, you can kind of look through here, and you'll find all the things that we talked about in class. And it's a beautiful prayer. And if you've got any questions about this after, you all have my email. A lot of you are using it. But go ahead and read through this. It's a very beautiful prayer. And everything that we've done in this class, everything that we've talked about is all in here. Okay? There's a lot of other meditations that we haven't done that are in there, I think. I'm pretty sure. I may have gone off track a couple of times, too. But a lot of people use this as a, like I say, a glance meditation because the entire practice is in that prayer. So go ahead and kind of go through that and look at that. Let's talk now about the teacher, okay? I've actually gotten a couple of emails about this. Some of you are jumping the gun a little bit, but that's awesome. Anticipation and excitement. But let's talk about the teacher and the importance of a spiritual guide, all right? We use the word teacher. You remember how we've talked about everything in Buddhism has different layers and different meanings than what we do in the West. Okay? We're going to do that one. Another one of those now. What do we think of in the West when we use that word teacher? Education. Okay? Elementary, college, teacher. Okay? We kind of come in and out of teachers. And while we, I think, respect... I have a teaching background, so I have a huge respect for teaching and teachers. Okay? The way we think of a teacher is we can go sit in class, we can listen to that teacher, and we can walk out, and we can never, don't even worry about that teacher again. All right? It's just a teacher. We don't think about it as this lifelong spiritual guide. Okay? From a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, we hear the word guru. We hear the word lama, okay? And from the West, we kind of go, cult, right off the bat. Who's drinking the Kool-Aid, right? Don't we have kind of a little bit of a funny feeling toward that word, the guru, my guru. If I came in here and started talking about my guru, I guarantee there'd be a few of you guys going, ooh, right? Okay? Guru and lama, same thing. Is a spiritual guide. All right, it actually means the word heavy, heavy with knowledge. From a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, before you choose a guru, there's a whole bunch of things that have to happen. All right? They say that you should check this person out for 10 to 12 years. You don't just pick one. Okay? From a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, you need to check this person out and make sure that they have at least 10 specific qualities. Okay, they're very defined about this. All right, so what are those qualities? Discipline, as a result of the mastery of the training of these higher morals that we talked about, these ethics. Mental quiescence, from the training of higher concentration, meaning they have calm abiding. They can do these long meditation sessions. They can work with their mind. Okay? They pacified all the delusions and obstacles, so they have higher wisdom. So those three are just huge. Those three are huge. The top three, right there. More knowledge than you do. Duh. But you'd be surprised at how often people miss that point. Okay? They should have more knowledge than you do. They should have enthusiastic perseverance and joy in teaching. And that means over and over and over again, because we have to take these lessons over and over again. It takes a long time to get the stuff, so they have to always have that patience to just keep teaching the same thing over and over again, because we need it. A treasury of scriptural knowledge. There's 84,000 teachings. Okay, nobody can know just one, or nobody can know all of them, but they have to have a depth of knowledge. Insight and understanding of emptiness. We're gonna touch on this, but this is something people, you know, work with for years. Skill in presenting the teachings. They have to be able to convey this and teach this. Great compassion and no reluctance to teach and work for the students. So this is a pretty in-depth list. This is a very specific list. So from our side, when we're looking for a teacher, we need to look for a teacher or a guru, lama, that has these qualities. Okay? And we should check it out. You're not gonna be able to check these out in a few months. You really should take some time. Now, they do say that when you're actually looking for a teacher will appear. That's one of the teachings, too. Okay, now, guess what? So we expect all of these qualities from this teacher. That teacher has the right to expect certain specific qualities from us. So they need to expect certain things from us. We have to be proper students. So not only do we need to check the teacher out, but we need to check upon ourselves. And there's a whole list of those qualities that we need to work on. Are we willing to listen? Are we able to listen? You know, there's a whole list. I'm not going to go through all of these things right now, but it's something that you can easily check out in many of the teachings, the qualities of the student, the qualities of the teacher. But think about it. Okay? Now, from, again, a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, this is not just a simple relationship. If you ask somebody to be your teacher, you're asking for a very great, great commitment on their part, because they are now responsible for you and for your spiritual well-being. This is huge, and they will not take this on lightly. So you might get refused if you asked. Continue to ask. Ask again, ask again, ask again. Look at why, possibly, what is on your side that you can be doing. Are you the right student? Are you prepared? But this is no light thing. This isn't just getting a teacher. It's not just choosing a college teacher. It's not just choosing a teacher for your elementary. I'm on some Facebook group, and there's a whole bunch of conversations going on right now about the right elementary teacher for the kids and which one and which one. And I appreciate some of the perspectives, but it's also, I think maybe you should go and talk to the teachers themselves so you get a direct perspective. But it's a lot different. Any questions about this? Anybody? About the spiritual guide and what that means and the big difference. It's a big difference. We do, from my, this is a Sandy opinion, I'll always try to clarify those. Okay, we do have, from my perspective, qualified teachers here. Okay, Geshe Galik. He separates himself out. When he teaches here at the center, he is our resident teacher. That's his title. But he calls himself our Dharma friend. Okay, so he's trying to make sure that we understand when we come on Sundays, when we come to class, that's our Dharma friend, because he will think of a teacher from a very different perspective. Does this make sense? So you'll hear those words, Dharma friend. I'm your Dharma friend. All right, it's a very specific thing if you're looking for a real spiritual teacher. So I don't want to dissuade anybody. We have in that Discovering Buddhism 2-year course that I talked about, we have a entire module on the spiritual friend. So you would spend, you know, 5-6 sessions, hour and a half, 2-hour sessions just on that. So this is a huge subject. There's a lot of depth here and a lot of levels and layers here. So there's some reading that I can recommend and some good conversations, because this is a great subject. I love this subject. Great class. All right. Okay, any questions on that? All right, we're diving in. I just have to make sure I cover everything. All right. We already did where we talked about the three principal aspects of the path. Renunciation, refuge. Let's go back. Let me find this. Where did we go? Next time. Three scopes, we did that. The principal aspects of the path. Renunciation, we talked about. Bodhicitta. Renunciation, not meaning give up all of your stuff, but it's finding that you really do want to change. And once you go through some of those things, the rest starts to happen. It's an internal process. It's not an external giving up of things. Bodhicitta is compassion. It is that boundless, endless, instantaneous compassion for all beings. The ultimate compassion. And then the wisdom of emptiness. All right. Okay, how many we've gotten there? All right, we just went through the guru. Okay, we're going to get something clear right now. I've got pens, a book, a purse, I got a puppy dog. I got some flowers. I'm going to take the flowers out. The way that we talk, the way that we speak, I've got to use the English language to start to explain this. Now, it's going to seem a little odd. Now, I took the flowers out of here, right? So you could actually say that this basket here is empty of flowers. Couldn't you? We don't talk that way, but we could use that phrase, that we're empty of flowers here. Right? Make sense? Is this empty, though? Is it empty? There's still stuff here, isn't there? Okay. Rule number one, emptiness does not mean nothingness. We're going to come back to that time and again. We do not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Emptiness does not mean nothingness. So we're going to get that out there right now. Emptiness is the absence or lack of true existence. Ultimately, every phenomenon is empty of existing truly or from its own side independently. That's the technical terms. All right? I'm going to read something here because Venerable Amy really explained it very well in her book. So let's just kind of go through this so we can kind of get a baseline on this. And a lot of people talk about emptiness being a difficult topic, and it is. It's interesting, and it's a little bit hard to set aside our own words and thoughts, and again, our definitions of things, because we just have these concepts that we kind of hold on to. And so emptiness, you know, that even that word from a Western perspective is just very, very difficult. True and inherited existence is also described as intrinsic reality. We're going to be talking about intrinsic reality from its own side, a lot of these terms. So let's just read something here, and so we have a base to start with. Once we develop calm abiding, which is that ability to maintain a focused meditation for as long as you want to, and with complete and total concentration. Okay? Once we develop calm abiding, we apply that extraordinary level of meditative stabilization to meditation on emptiness. While calm abiding is a type of single-pointed concentration, emptiness is a type of analytical meditation. This is a thought process, all right? When engaging in meditation on emptiness, your ability to analyze the nature of phenomena is greatly advanced. That's why the unified path of calm abiding and special insight is so very profound. When you can hold in your mind, single-pointedly on the analysis of how things exist, you can see the truth of emptiness and experience a direct perception of ultimate reality. That's part of that goal that we're going for, okay? So what does that term emptiness mean? According to Tibetan Buddhism, emptiness refers to an absence of inherent existence. What is inherent existence? Inherent existence is a quality that we instinctively project onto ourselves and everything we experience. We see things as solidly, concretely existing from their own side in and of themselves by way of their own nature, independent of causes and conditions, parts, or our own mind experiencing them. We're going to talk about this too. All right. If we see a flower in a pot and somebody asks us if that's real or if it's really a flower, the type of image that appears to our minds is an image of inherent existence. We're looking for an inherently existent flower, a real one. Our projection of inherent existence is completely unconscious and very subtle. In fact, we don't even think it's a projection at all. We think that when we perceive an object, the object is presenting itself to us, not the other way around. We understand what we're doing, what projecting an inherently existent object means experientially. Once we understand this, then we're on our way. All right? So let's start. What I'm going to try to do is come at this from a lot of different ways. All right? Because there's a lot of you guys that have been reading for a while. All right? Glimpses. We're only going to have, you know, about 20 minutes to talk about this, and then we're going to have to move on. This is the tip of the course, so I'm going to come at this from a bunch of different directions, and hopefully something's going to kind of work. Different analogies. Okay. Independent. Let's see. What was I going to do? This one. Dependent arising. This is, you have to understand this so that we can understand emptiness. Okay, the way that the self and the phenomenon exist conventionally as relative and interdependent. Things come into existence in dependence upon causes and conditions, their parts, and the mind that labels them, the mind that sees. Okay, so this is what we're going to talk about right now. Dependent arising. There is nothing that exists from its own side. So we call this a flower, right? This is conventionally English language. We have labeled this as a flower. When does it stop being a flower? When it stops looking? So is it still a flower? When do we? Okay, so we have all these parts, right? This is parts. These are the parts of the flower. And all of a sudden now, from a labeling side, we don't call this a flower anymore. Right? So let's just keep walking through this stuff. How did the flower get here? There was a seed planted. It was watered. It got sunshine. Started to grow. Causes and conditions, right? That's what started it. Parts of a flower. Okay? And the mind, we have labeled this. We call this a flower. So this flower, this thing exists because of those things. It is dependent on those things. There's nothing that is not dependent on those things. Nothing exists from its own side. Like I said, I'm going to keep walking through here. This is where this gets a little hilarious. If something were permanent, if this flower were permanent, if this were permanent and existed from its own side, I wouldn't be able to do this. I wouldn't be able to rip it apart. If this flower existed permanently from its own side, every sentient being, everything with a mind, would label this a flower. It would be a flower if it existed from its own side. To us, it's a flower. What is this to a bee? Food. What is it to a dog? Something to chew on or play on or dig up. What is it to an ant? You know, an obstacle. Any mind. You know, and we call it a flower. Somebody from a different country is going to name it something else. Those are just labels that we put on it. Right? Hanging? Kinda. Okay? So, everything exists independent arisen. Everything exists because it is a dependent arising. But we don't think of things that way. We think of things like they're permanent. We think of things and we expect things to be permanent. And that's what causes a lot of our suffering. So we got to wrap all the way around because this is some of the base of suffering right here. So this is why we have to understand that. Kind of hanging? Makes sense? All right. Everything is this way. So you guys are either getting this really easily or something's wrong. Because normally I get a lot of blank faces, and y'all are kind of nodding. So everybody understands? Go ahead. Wait, Mike. We project these things and this idea of permanence on everything. I can't believe it's going to be this easy.
Okay, so you said everything is impermanent?
Yes.
Is the mind impermanent?
I love that question. I was hoping somebody would ask that. Okay, so let's walk it through. This is part of the practice. People sit and meditate on this stuff. And this is in some ways what I challenge you to do, is think about this. So, causes and condition parts. Okay, so what could be some causes and conditions for the mind? Or even parts. Parts is really easy.
The brain?
No. Well, physical. Okay, so that's in this aspect. What is the mind? That continuous stream of thought, right? So your mind has thoughts. Your mind has memories. So there are parts to your mind. Okay, so the mind is not permanent. Because the mind is based causes and conditions. Every mind moment is caused by a previous mind moment. So the mind is impermanent as well. Because you can break it down.
Okay, so what about consciousness, or if we can have multiple lives. Something continues, right? Is there anything that is permanent? I guess it's a better question.
No. And think about it this way, too, because I'm just going to keep throwing stuff out. The very moment something arises, the very moment it does, it is already deteriorating. It is already passing. It's already changing. Well, that's true. It's already changing. That's a good way to put it. Thank you. It's already changing.
The changing makes more sense.
Yes. Back here.
But, that you talked about how there's three layers to the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So the subtlest layer?
The subtlest layer.
Isn't that permanent? Doesn't that remain no matter what?
Well, remaining no matter what, it's going to continue, but it's still going to change, isn't it? That's the whole point, because we want to turn that into a completely pure, virtuous mind. But it will continue, it will change. But this is what Chris was just making the point. We're not saying that it's permanent, we're tending to think of permanent in a time aspect, mm-hmm. but it's going to change. It will continually change. It's not going to go away, but it's going to continue to change.
Because you said there's the first level of mind.
The gross level. That's the one that we're usually aware of. Okay. Then the subtle level. Sometimes people in some ways call that the subconscious, but there's a lot more meaning to that. And then that most subtle level. And that most subtle level is the part that we talked about that does go on to the next rebirth.
So that does change.
It does change.
Okay.
And we want it to.
Okay.
Because that's the one that we want to clear out of all obscurations. We want to keep working. We want that to become the most virtuous mind. Then that's the point. That's the joy, because we can change it. Yeah. We have the ability to.
Okay.
Yes.
Illusion. Are you saying that impermanence is illusion?
No, I'm saying that the illusion is when we think things are permanent. Okay?
Yes, when I look at that flower, even though you've taken it apart, I still see a flower.
Yeah, you see this vision of in your head, this vision.
Mm-hmm. No, the essence of flower. I see the pieces, but mm-hmm. I see the essence of the flower continued.
But it can't function as a flower.
Right. Conventionally, it can't function as a flower.
But then that would be our definition of flower.
Which is the label. So it's... Go ahead. Okay, go for it.
It's like, imagine an ant walking along and running into a wall. He sees this...
obstacle.
No, yeah, obstacle, can't do anything about it. Can't put a door in it. Can't change it at all. So it's different to that mind. That's not working. I don't know. I'm not sure what I was thinking there. Go on.
Question back there. Or comment.
It just brings me a book I read quite some time ago by Zhukov, you know, The Seat of the Soul. So he asks the question, so, you know, who are you? So I'm a wife, a mother, a mm-hmm. sister, a daughter. So if I lose my husband, am I still me? If I lose my child, am I still me? If I lose my parents, am I still me? I'm a business person. If I lose my business, am I still me? If I lose both my arms, at what point do you stop becoming you?
And the labels.
So you never really come to that answer.
No, you don't.
Right? Everybody has their own perception. At what point do you say that this person has stopped being that person? It's an excellent book because it walks you through the steps. So you shed yourself of your... Yeah. Titles, your belongings.
There's a meditation on that that I've done. So it's, you know, literally when you're meditating, you think of a whiteboard up here and you start writing all your labels. And that's a fun practice too, because they are all these labels that we have. Another question? Okay.
Lack of questions.
We're empty of questions. We are empty of questions. So sit with this. Okay, now let's start thinking about, okay, what does this mean? And how can we use this? How can we use this in our everyday life? All right, I'll give you some specific examples of how I try to use it. The mind, the labeling mind, this is, things come into existence because everything that's out here is because I'm labeling it, because I'm putting things on there. All right? So a lot of the things that I put on there are not correct.
That's what I meant by the ant sees things. The ant consciousness sees things way different.
So, yeah, all kinds of
things. It's like if you make a recipe, mm-hmm. you know, you whip up something and you feed it to two friends, and one friend says, "This is the best whatever in the world. I love it." But then the other friend says, "That is loud. Oh my God, you made that for me? You know, what are you trying to do? Kill me?"
But it's the same thing.
It's the same thing, but both consciousness see it as two different things. So there's no inherent deliciousness
and why?
Or badness in that thing.
Why do two different consciousnesses have a different perspective? Why? Perceptions? Why do you have those perceptions? Why? Here's a good one. Think back. How come you would see something that he wouldn't? Yeah. You're almost.
Karma is.
Yeah, you're not supposed to go there, Chris. You know these classes. Karma, you were there. Okay, these past experiences, past stuff, why would you see something that you don't see? Why, there's two people on a bus going down a freeway in the mountains. One person is looking and seeing this beautiful sky that's out there, and the next one is thinking about all of this awful stuff that's going on. It's the same experience, but you're having different experiences. It's the karma. It's your karma. So this is you. This all does wrap around. I promise it does. Okay? But how do we use this in our life? So I go through my life, and I've told you about equanimity, having that problem with that vendor that I was so upset with. And then I sat with it, and I changed my mind. I didn't do anything to him. I didn't even tell him I was doing it. But because I changed, he changed. Because all of a sudden I realized, you know what, these are all my concepts that I'm putting on him. We do this all the time. We do this without even thinking about it. And we go to the restaurant. We're going to sit down. We're going to have this big fancy dinner, and then we're going to order dessert, and we order the chocolate cake, and they're out of chocolate cake, and they've got carrot cake there. Well, then you get upset. So you're putting that perception, number one, of happiness being in the chocolate cake, and if they don't have it, they're empty of chocolate cake, all of a sudden you're going to start to get upset about these things. But we put these judgments and things. It's like we have this person sitting here, and we put this wrapper over them of likes, dislikes, attachments, aversions, and we don't see that person that's underneath there. So we wrap these other things up with it. We wrap the label up with the thing. And we put it up, we stuff it all together. So we have to take these labels and these illusions and these obscurations off so that we can see it clearly. Because a lot of it is what we're putting on there. If it was the same thing, if we all liked orange flowers, we'd all like the same thing. But this is empty. But it's whether you like it or not, you're putting that on here. Does this make sense? Are you kind of a little bit there?
Where does the perception begin?
In your mind. Your perception begins with you. Wherever your karma brought you. Just keep going all the way back. These are the seeds that are planted.
But I remember you said something about it being there is no beginning and there is no end.
That's right. It's all going to be a previous, a previous, a previous, a previous.
So there's no start to it at all.
To the perception of that particular flower?
Like, how do we know red is red?
Well, that's a conventional question.
It's still perception.
It's labeling. Yep. That's more of a conventional question.
Yeah, But think about it. We don't know if when we see red,
we
see it the same way as somebody else seeing it.
That happens all the time.
Right. Correct. Everything's like that.
Yep. No. There is no beginning in Buddhism. Not that I've ever been told. Okay. Chris.
Thank you. So doesn't this mean that there's the possibility of change for anything?
Yes. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. That's the hopeful side of
That's the hopeful side. Thank you, because that is the hopeful side. And a lot of people, that is actually one of my most exciting parts of this whole thing for me. That's what drew me. It's one of the things that hugely drew me. Yes, there is the possibility for change for anything. And this goes back to that. That's a good way to put that one. What's Venerable Rubina's thing about the little acorn? Okay, so you've got the little acorn. This is another one that I like a lot. You've got that little acorn. But really, what is that acorn? It's an oak tree. Okay? Of all the causes and conditions, that's what its nature is. Its nature is to be an oak tree. Our nature is to be that clear mind, to be that Buddha. That's what our nature is. It's just like that acorn. Its nature is to be an oak tree. Our nature is to be a Buddha. We have that in us to do. We just have to clear away all of this obscuration and all of this ignorance. That's what our nature is. She's got a phenomenal talk on that. I love that. And once you start working with it, it's really cool. But that is the hope.
Is it a cycle?
Is what a cycle?
Well, like the acorn grows into a tree, produces more acorns. Just like the flower, if you planted
But it's not. That's not that cycle that goes back. Okay, so we're in the cycle of samsara. Okay, life, birth, death, you know, that kind of cycle. But it's not that acorn doesn't like go down and do that acorn again. It does more acorns. So it's kind of cycling this way. Does that make sense? You just sit there and smile. I love that. I want to read that book. Yeah. That's a great meditation, that labeling thing. You know, but we do. We sit here and we put labels on. You know, we do it with people all the time. We do it with people all the time, right here. And we put labels and we put these judgments on people all the time. And if we just would stop and let some of those go, that's how we use this in everyday life. Go ahead.
Going back to the teacher.
Okay.
We are taught the labels as we grow. So going back, and experiencing karma, some of us, I guess, are more aware and start asking questions sooner than others.
Yep.
So if conventional Western wisdom is to teach it and teach it so that you have all these labels on these things and it continuously perpetuates itself with the same teachings.
Okay, I think
there's,
that, yeah.
There's only a few people that start to become aware that this is what we do. We label things and we have the ability to change it, but it really isn't.
Right.
It really isn't changing quick
right.
enough.
Well, nothing is, but that's one of my aspirational wishes, is that next time in life that I get here earlier. Okay, but now let's think about this. Let's separate, because you've got two phenomenal thoughts there. Okay, so conventional elementary school teaching language, whether it's in the West, whether it's over in Japan, we have to communicate. So we work with these labels. That's one thing. When we say labels conventionally, this is a chair, this is how you do it, that's a computer, here's how we're going to do PowerPoints, here's math, and you're going to learn this. So there's that communication that we have to have. But now all of a sudden you went all the way over here to a spiritual awareness, to what labels from a Buddhist perspective, because that's what we're talking about. Now, there actually is a shift now in schools, isn't there? You hear a lot more mindfulness. You hear a lot different things. So there is a little bit of a shift and a little bit more of an awareness. Now, this is also something we talk about here in the West, but if you go over to Thailand and some other countries in India, they're there already with a lot of it, because they teach it a little bit differently, and their cultures have a much more way of life about their spirituality than we tend to do here in the West. So there was a whole bunch of layers in there, right?
So maybe I'm ahead of myself.
You are. You could very well be. But does that make sense? So in the West, we tend to talk about things separately, whereas in a lot of foreign cultures, it is more of a way of life, and we kind of put religion and churches over in a box. You know what I'm saying? That's just the way we tend to think here. You know, and we do it on Sundays. We practice on Sundays, we go to church, and then it's good, and then, you know, and then the rest of the week it's like whatever, and then we go back and apologize and start over. Okay? But if we took it and really tried to do it every day and work with it every day and make it a way of life, it's a different thing. And that could be true of any faith. So it depends on what we're doing with it here. Now, all of a sudden, that falls right back into Buddhism and being an inner being and looking in here instead of out there. See how this kind of wraps back a little bit? And then this is what Buddhism is. The same things, going around these same objects, talking about these same things. Okay? You go to some of these other classes, they're going to talk about the same thing. John, you experienced that the other night in the Lam Rim class. All of a sudden, Geshe-la's talking about all the things that we've been talking about here. You know, you're going to go to, you know, Venerable Rubina's teaching, Pema Chodron's teaching, go listen to an audio book, and all of a sudden say, oh, there's karma. There's emptiness. This is it. Okay? These are the main subjects. And you're going to hear them over and over again, and you're going to hear them in different ways. And that's it. And sometimes we'll get that glimpse. We'll get that glimpse. There it is. I'll have that when I'm sitting in the teacher's chair. You ever do that? Where all of a sudden, I got it. Half an hour later, it's gone. I do that all the time. So, but that's the trick. Then I try to get it again. Try to work on it again. Stay with it longer. Or those times that you have the theoretical knowledge, and when you can turn it into experiential knowledge. Once you turn it into experiential, you I've not found that I've lost it. Once I get it that way, I don't know if that makes sense. I have no clue what time it is. Oh, we're doing good. Any questions? You guys, like I said, you all have been reading. Usually I get a lot of people that haven't been doing a lot of reading, so we're talking about these things much more. It takes a lot longer.
Can I ask a question?
Oh, please. Okay.
Is there a time where we would put ourselves in a place of suffering. And what I mean by that is, I'll give you my example. For me right now, it would be very easy for me. I was married for a long time, divorced, and it was very painful to go through. It would be very easy for me to say, I do not want to be attached like that to another, like in another relationship, for example. But I also think that that would be the easy way out to not, you know, want to love again or to not. Is there a difference?
Yes. Short answer. Remember the definitions. All right, so remembering the definition, the definition of love, the wish that that person is happy, regardless. Okay, and attachment doesn't mean you don't love. Okay, we in the West use that. We think that that word attachment is a good thing, and we use it that way. Oh, I'm very attached to my husband. I'm very attached to my cat. I'm very, you know, so we think of that word as it means I love them or I'm very attached to them. We're using it as a different term. So attachment from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective means that that element, let's use the love, because it's all mixed up, and that's part of what we struggle with a little bit, but it's we love them, and it's the attachment part is because of what they're doing for us. Okay, if we can take the attachment out, it's a more pure love, and you want that person to be happy no matter what, even if they're, that means it's not with you. Does this make sense a little bit? So attachment is that exaggeration of the good qualities and exaggeration of the bad qualities. You know, oh, this person is so perfect, and they're doing everything for me, and I love them, and they make me happy. Well, that's not love, is them making you happy. Love should be you making them happy. And if they're loving too, it works that way.
Well, I guess from what I'm thinking is that you can't make another person happy. You can wish them to be happy.
Right.
But do you avoid suffering from the standpoint of knowing that you've already been there once? That's what I'm getting at. Or do you go out there and, you know, get right back into...
Well, that's always a choice. I think in some ways I know. Did you have something you wanted to say, or were you just... Yeah.
Oh, I was just thinking Tonglen.
Okay, Tonglen is... Yeah. There's a couple of things going on there, because some of it is you're making a choice. Do you make a choice to try, and I'm going to be careful how I say some of this stuff, but do you make a choice not to try to love again? Okay? Because of fear of getting hurt.
Suffering.
Of suffering. Okay? So, in a way, that's a choice, but then, in some ways to me, you're already suffering. Because if you're without love, and it's not somebody loving you, it's you loving them. You know, we can't control that other person, but, you know, there's... So love is about, for me, it's about loving that person. So if to choose not to love, I it's not really an option for me. Does that make sense? To try to go out and date, and that's a completely other subject, and that's a personal choice.
I understand love from, like, loving another person, loving another human being, but... Wouldn't that be more of choosing like a monastic type lifestyle?
But you're mixing so many things up there to me. That's we have levels and levels of conversation that are going on there. And to be very clear that you wouldn't choose a monastic lifestyle to get away from something.
That's what I'm asking.
That's to avoid. If you're thinking about going into a monastic lifestyle, it's because you're choosing to go into that. You're choosing to go serve. You're choosing these things. It's not going to get away from something. That's actually a huge mistake that many...
That's all I get.
Yeah.
To me, to not
going back out there again and put myself out.
What's your expectation? So all of a sudden it's like it's that definition of expectations. You want a permanent. So this is here it is right here. You're looking for a permanent love. A permanent. So your expectation is to go out there and get something permanent, and that's the attachment is there, the expectation of permanence is there, and this is impermanence. So we talked about equanimity and that, you know, stranger, enemy, friend, and so how they can all change so easily and interchange. And there it is. So we have the expectation of permanence that causes suffering because it's not going to happen. Even if you did love, that person is, you know, eventually going to die, or you're going to leave first. So see how we create this suffering just by our wish and attachment and expectation of permanence. Now, he mentioned the word Tonglen. Okay, Tonglen is actually one of my personal all-time favorite meditations, and it's a meditation on compassion, and it's an actual beautiful meditation about being able to, in some ways, take the suffering of others. Okay, so anytime that you're suffering with something, and you're going through something, and because you sometimes you don't have a choice. Okay, if you have cancer, if you're dealing with these awful things, if you have this, and you have that beautiful meditation where, okay, I'm in this, I'm suffering, I have this, you know, I have to deal. You know, I wish I could take everybody's suffering. As long if I've got to suffer, I might as well just take it all. Okay, and just take in everybody's suffering and give out love. It is the most beautiful thing. You could actually say that Jesus on the cross performed Tonglen, because that was exactly what he did, taking the sufferings of everybody and giving back love. That's Tonglen. That's a beautiful meditation if you ever want to look that one up. There's some specific ones that are, I think the How to Meditate book has it in there. There's a few others. That's a beautiful meditation. One of my favorites. I do it a lot. What other questions? Back in the back. Don Brown, one of the Discovering Buddhism teachers, has a great meditation on Tonglen, a guided meditation on Tonglen that you would, I'm not sure which class he does it in, but I've sat with him a couple of times. Yes?
So what are the implications of emptiness? Like, in how you, I don't know, what are the implications?
Implications in, like, the everyday life?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go there. Implications of everyday life. How to use it in everyday life. Dealing with people, to me, is one of the main ways that I try to use it. I am still such a baby on the ladder. Okay, so you're going through things. We have these people that are, you know, making us frustrated or angry. And you know what? That's empty. And if we can work with that, because we put these judgments, we put these labels, we put these stories on them, and if we can think about emptiness when we're sitting there frustrated with a coworker, and first of all, be aware of those labels that we're putting on them, and I mean all the labels. This person's frustrated, they're angry, they're dumb, they don't know what they're talking about, whatever those things are that we're making up in our heads, we're making those up. Okay? And if we can actually think about those while we're doing it, or if they're mad, there could be so many reasons, but this is all coming on our side. So if we try to think about it and let go of those labels and things that we would put on them, it would make our lives easier. We can't do too much about them, but I guarantee you, if you change yourself, it will help. Mm-hmm. That's just one. Okay? Now let's go into possessions. Okay? We're looking at, we buy this new car. And we have it's taking all this attachment on all these things that we've got. And we think that that car is going to give us happiness and we're going to feel better and we're going to have all these things and all this prestige. And we park it way in the far off part of the lot because we don't want it to get scratched. And that car is really empty of all these things. But we put all this on there. So if we can have that awareness of possessions, so you can just walk down, right? Chris, got any more? Go ahead.
I think it's fun to...
Yep.
It's like the table. You see the carpenter, and you see the nail, and you see the tree, and you see the carpenter's parents, and you see the carpenter's grandparents. Without any of those things, there would not be this compounded thing that we label a table. And that seems to help me see the lack of value in possessions, or that they're...
Yeah, it's the lack of value and the interdependence.
Yeah.
There is, we've got such a vibrant children's program here. It's phenomenal. And I've heard some of them working with the kids and literally sitting there and having like a basket of fruit on the table. And they'll spend an hour talking about what all went into putting that basket of fruit on the table, down to the grocery store and the bakers and the people at the store and then the truckers bringing the fruit and all the... I mean, they'll just do this forever, and the kids get very excited about being able to discover new ways of, you know, who else was involved, down to the bees and the pollen that did it and the seeds and, you know, I mean, the tractor drivers. It's hilarious when you... But it really is true. And that's when you just start to get that dependence and you realize just how close we really are. You know, it's very easy for us to sit here and, you know, have this distance, but we're all dependent. We are all dependent. Just the clothes on our backs. It's all dependent. So you take it just from the more the conventional sense, and then it can go all the way through to that spiritual. So that's like I said, all these things are meditations to me. Sit down. Now that you've practiced it and you've done it, you start to go through some of these concentration meditations, and then just sit down and think about some of these things. Sit down and try to think about the emptiness of things. Sit down and try to think about how these things can be dependent. Argue with yourself. Those are good. You know, or why, you know, here's some more emptiness and the application of it. Okay, so you have something go on at work, and somebody says something, and you either get mad or hurt. Okay, or both. So I've had that happen. And then I'll go back and I will sit and I will meditate and I will think, why did that make me mad? Why did that hurt? Why? And that's always a fun example when you have to work through your own pride issues. And that is a negative. You know, when that pride, why does that bother me that they didn't think that I was smarter, or why did that bother me? So then you start to work on these things, and that's you're working on yourself. That's something I try to do in an everyday application type of thing. Going through at night, how did my day go? And I'll try to think of some of those things. And I'll think about precious human rebirth. I'll think about emptiness and try to apply it. You know, I got so upset about that. Well, it's not the way it was. Go ahead.
Well, that can really get rid of a lot of blame. Or a lot of...
Oh, yes. Yeah, blame is something we're really good at here, aren't we? It's their fault. Yeah.
If you realize, like, it's not their fault, but it's, you know, also the fault of what happened to them, or they didn't get sleep, or that happened to them, or this, or...
Yeah, just opening it up and how it reacts. Again, it's trying to... Now, you know, taking that where somebody says something and does something, you know, conventionally, if somebody reaches out and punches you, there was a, you know, it hurts. You know, get away. Mm-hmm. But if you stop and you think about the whys and wherefores and, the karmic repercussions there, and it's about how you react to these things. It's huge.
So is the wisdom of emptiness, is that just realizing everything is interdependent, really?
It's realizing everything is interdependent and realizing that we are not seeing things the way that they really exist. And that's a really tough concept. And yeah. It's especially, like I said, it's always going through those, the Western words that we use are always interesting. Sometimes I'll find that whether Geshe-la or somebody from another country, they say it, but they say it differently, and sometimes it makes more sense, even though their English syntax is, you know, there's, you know, that's empty of flour. We just don't talk that way, but we all understand what we mean mm-hmm. when we say that, but it's not empty. It's just empty of flour. The first time I ever got that was Venerable Verbena, and it was forks in a drawer. And it was like all of a sudden, oh, now all of a sudden I got it. Don Brown uses, you know, you can hear a tiger, and but there is no tiger. So it's just, you know, you just have to come at these with different analogies, and sooner or later something's going to strike you the same way it did me. And you hope to have those realizations.
So does dependent arising, is that the whole thing about interdependence?
Like it's both. It's everything. Dependent arising is really comes down to emptiness, the way that the self and the phenomena exist conventionally as relative and interdependent. They come into existence dependent upon causes and conditions, their parts, the mind labeling. So nothing exists independently. Nothing exists from its own side. It has causes and conditions. It's got a mind that labels it and the parts.
Mm-hmm.
So everything can be broken down that way. Sit with that sometime and just try to come up with something.
Okay.
The book, Buddhism in a Nutshell, that Amy Miller and the other FPMT teachers wrote has a great whole chapter on it. She explains it very, very well. There's whole books on this. This is, you know, like the subject in Buddhism. So read them all. There's the class that are discovering Buddhism module. The Wisdom of Emptiness is phenomenal, and they've got some great readings on that CD as well. Great readings on that. This was like scarily easy. I'm feeling like I really dropped the ball here because y'all just seem to have not only we're going around and around.
Yeah. Emptiness only appears in Buddhism. There's no other, I think, I heard.
Yeah, not in this particular.
Right. Like other religions have karma and
yep.
But emptiness is unique to Buddhism. That's, I'm not bragging, I'm just saying. Okay.
Yeah, and because things are empty, here we'll just try to wrap this around again. Because things are empty, that's one of the reasons that our actions are so incredibly important. Because that's what affects everything. That makes sense? What other questions? Because we're coming down to the end. Nothing else? All right, next steps. That's always everybody's question, next steps. If you go to the Kadampa Center website, there's a wealth of information on there, and that will explain a lot of the other classes. Next week, Meditation 101. That's the alternating course with Buddhism in a nutshell. Okay, these are the two, you know, kind of beginner courses. And that will be with Jill Marie. And you'll go much more into meditation. We have done short ones. We have done, you know, little five-minute guided ones. Okay, she's going to go through all of those with you. And you will have an hour and a half class where you will be able to talk about it. She'll help those who want to set up a daily meditation. Walk through some of that. You can go much, much more in-depth, lots more questions, lots more meditations. So that's another 5 or 6 week course that'll be on Tuesday nights with Jill Marie. Monday nights, is our Discovering Buddhism class. That's a very wonderful next step for anybody who's looking to go into this in a much more deeper aspect. They're finishing the last of 14 modules. Actually, this is the 13th module on Tantra. The 14th module in the Discovering Buddhism series is actually a special integration module. And if y'all are thinking about that one, look at that 14th module right away, because that has things that you could start working on even at the beginning. Read it so that you understand it, because it's talking about retreats. It's talking about setting up, you know, a regular spiritual practice. There's other things that go along with that. Don't wait the 2 years to look at that. Okay, start looking at it right away. But that one is coming up on the end of the two-year series, and that means it's going to start again. They're going to start a new cycle here within the next few months. So you have perfect timing to go into that. The first module of that is called Mind and Its Potential, and that is a phenomenal class. You'll have 6 weeks probably with Robbie Watkins, who is our center director, and this is that in-depth of the mind. And that is a wonderful next step from here. Now, there's a certification that you can go for if you ever would think about teaching or to do anything with it. So pay attention to that, because if it's something you might want to think about, then you can take that class, you can take the tests and get certified. You'd get, for each class, you'd take a test and get certified. Like this class, no tests, nothing. This is just come on in. You can do that. You can just go and audit these classes and enjoy them, pop in and out, go when you want to, just as easily. But if you're thinking about taking it a little more deeply, you might want to just pay attention to that. Go ahead and read up on it. But that's a phenomenal, phenomenal series. You can take that online as well. The FPMT, which is our governing body, fpmt.org, offers that as an online course as well. So that's something to look at. Many people have done both. Wednesday nights, Geshe-la teaches a Lam Rim class. That is a little bit deeper diving, but not really. It's the same basic subjects that we've talked about. I think John's gone to that class. You didn't feel out of your depth at all. We're still in the beginning. He's going literally carefully through the books. Okay? And so it's easy enough to catch up, because we're only a few months in, and Geshe-la is very careful about this. But this is where we'll really sit down and talk through all of the parts of the Lam Rim. So that's open to everybody. That's also a wonderful class to come to, and we use specific books that you can read with that. A lot of people ask about the more traditional Buddhist classes and things that we have here. We have everything from pujas, which is our prayer meetings, prayer gatherings, and there's different kinds. There's guru pujas, medicine Buddha pujas, and that's very traditional. Sometimes they're in a mix of Tibetan and English, and those are the best way I can explain those is take a whisk broom, and if you take out a couple of those strands and try to sweep, you're not going to get very far, but if you bundle them together, you'll be able to move some dirt. And that's the way that to think about these prayer gatherings. Many voices in the same raised in the same song. It is beautiful. When you go, I will recommend. We're so quick to judge here in the West, and you'll try it a couple of times, and it's like, oh, I don't like that. You know, try everything here a few times, because we just really don't know. I'll be honest and say, the first couple of times that I went years ago, I didn't particularly care for it, because I even remember when we're reading out of the books and we're doing this, and I'm going, more pages, okay. You know, I had that attitude. And it wasn't until I went, because I'll always keep trying before I make a decision. And once I went often enough that I could understand what we were saying and the prayers that were being said, and I think they're beautiful now, because I can hear it now. So we have the pujas. We have Tara practice. That's another very specific practice. These are the more traditional. So we have everything here from, you know, the layman type classes to very traditional Buddhist practices. We don't have very many classes where you have to have a prerequisite, but we do have one. We do have one on our Friday nights, and that one you do have to have finished the full 2-year Discovering Buddhism before you can enter that class. That's the basic program. While they call it the basic program, it's actually the next level up. So that one is a closed class, and only for those that have taken the entire DB series. We have a lot of events going on at the center. Sundays are our regular teaching, 9 a.m. and 10:45, and Sundays, Geshe-la keeps those very basic, very open, because we have people of all faiths, all stages, all everything coming on Sunday. So feel free to come and start that relationship with Geshe-la. Listen to Geshe-la. He is the true teacher. He is phenomenal. Create that relationship. Several of you have asked about finding a teacher and having more discussions. Venerable Chuki is our one of our nuns here, and it's very easy to set up an appointment directly with Chukila. Okay, remember at the beginning we talked about that? The name and the la at the end means a respectful endearment. So Chukila, Geshe-la. She is phenomenal. So if you have deeper questions, I would very much recommend setting an appointment with her. That's why they're here. That's what we're all looking for, is those relationships with our Sangha. It is also very possible to set up an appointment with Geshe-la. Okay, so start with Chukila, go to Geshe-la, or go straight to Geshe-la. I can help anybody to set those up. We actually have the appointments emails online, and so I've had actually there's three of you that have asked about that, and I would always recommend that, you know, get that relationship with our teachers. That's why we're here. It's all fine to listen to Sandy and, you know, several of other of our teachers. But, you know, we have Sangha. We have phenomenal, wonderful, very well trained and wise Sangha here. So go there. What other classes am I missing? Oh, membership. Guess what? You're speaking to the membership coordinator, too. We all wear many hats, and we're all volunteers here. So if you get involved, you know that you're going to be talking to me. And Chukila is also the volunteer coordinator. Okay, membership in the Kanapa Center is free. We have the membership orientation on the second Sunday of every month. And so we'd come back in here, and you'd talk to me again. Check it out. We are not, the best way I can describe it is we're not looking to get a whole bunch of members. Okay, we want people to become members if you feel like this is a good fit for you, and if you want to, you know, become involved. We're almost entirely a volunteer organization. Membership is free. We don't charge actually for anything at all here at the center, very seldom. We are able to do everything just by the generosity of our members, our visitors. If you find, like for instance, if you have found that this class has been a benefit at all, we have donation boxes. You know, very few, you know, I don't get paid, Chris doesn't get paid to come here, but we still have a lot of the mortgage, the lights, the air conditioner, all of these things. But we are one of the few centers in the world. We're one of the few FPMT centers that operates entirely from the generosity of the people that come here. And we're able to make that work. I used to be able to say we're the only one. But there's actually other centers around the world that are starting to see that for whatever reason, it's working here. But most of the time, you could expect to pay $5 or $10 every time you walk in for a class. And actually, I mean, think about it. You know, we pay for yoga classes. We pay for all of these different classes. And we're used to it. The center, since its inception, has really fought hard to stay on a generosity. It's one of the six perfections, and it's working for us. So there's some other centers around the world that are trying it now, too. So if you find that it's been a benefit, we have donation boxes. You can donate online. But membership here, there aren't any dues. And it's just about being part of our family and helping, and you get to count on us just as much as we can count on you. We do record these classes, which is why we were trying so hard to get everybody to use the mic. So with membership, you would have access to the online area of our website, and that's where we keep the recordings. And you can listen to recordings of this class and hear me again. But go find Scott's. Scott Miller taught this quite often, and he's had to move, and we're going to miss him dearly. But so you have the recordings. You can go listen to Geshe. You can go track down other recordings. This wonderful volunteer back there, Chris Baranski, is the one who takes care of that area. And there's a lot, a wealth of information. I mean, that's worth the whole membership right there, in my opinion. I download to listen to him in my car. So now when you come on Sunday to the membership thing, you don't have to hear me talk again because I just went through it all. What other questions? So lots of opportunities to get involved. And this is a wonderful, wonderful place. What other questions? I really hope. Go ahead.
For the Discovering Buddhism class on Monday night, you were saying they were just wrapping up their routine with the last module.
Yes.
And you were recommending, if I get this right, going to that module maybe in preparation for.
I would. We're going to let the train pass. The impermanence of train. Dion. Is Tantra over? There's one more class next week? Okay, so there's one more class next week, and then that will be over. Okay, so don't go next week. That'll be like way deep into the pool. But it's going to be starting a new session, and I'm not sure if it's going to be right away in a few weeks, but watch for that next session. Mind and its potential, go there. That's the first module of the entire Discovering Buddhism. And again, we're all volunteers here, so I'm not sure when they're going to be scheduling it. A lot of it depends on when the teacher would be available. Sometimes they have a little bit of a break. But that next one, it's one of my favorites. They're all one of my favorites. Who am I kidding? I just really like that one. Okay, this website is a work in progress, and again, we're all volunteers here, and this is actually an interim site. So when you go to the website, I have to do it this way because otherwise you'll be backwards. So you go to the website, right? You've got the Kadampa Center, then over here there's a little bar that's got the weekly events, and up here there's several small donate, and there's a calendar where you can see the entire calendar, and it's a little line up on the top. I'm a visual. Okay. Well, that's really it. Thank you all very much for coming. Thanks for putting up with me. I hope that I helped or that I didn't muck things up too badly. So thank you. Bye. Take care. And thank you very much for coming. And any other questions, I'm sure I'll see you around.